Hey, everybody, it's Terry McDougall at Marketing Mambo. My guest today is Michael Bjarnes, and Michael is a marketer in the pharmaceutical industry. And if you've been a listener to Marketing Mambo, you know that I am very interested in all aspects of marketing. And one of the things that I've seen is that for many people, getting a business degree or maybe communications degree is the foundation upon which they build their marketing career. And for Michael, his career was built on a foundation of science. He was a biology major and then got a master's in biotechnology. And so that makes sense because pharmaceuticals is such a complex and science-based industry. I was super curious to learn more about what it's like being a marketer in pharmaceuticals. And I think that you'll be really interested to hear what he has to say. And not only that, but Mike has also written a book called Redefining Success. And he's got a lot of interesting insights into what it means to lead a successful life, not just a successful career. So settle in and enjoy the conversation that I had with Mike. And speaking of successful life and successful career, if you've listened to any of my podcasts, whether Marketing Mambo or any that I've been a guest on, you know that I'm passionate about helping people expand that overlap between professional success and personal happiness. And you can check out Mike's book, Redefining Success, or if you also want to have some tips on not only how to be happier in your life, but more successful in your career, check out my book, Winning the Game of Work, Career Happiness and Success on Your Own Terms. It's available on Amazon and pretty much any place else that books are sold. So now, without further ado, let the Mambo begin. Welcome to Marketing Mambo with your host, Terry McDougall. It's the fun and fast podcast where we chat with marketing movers and shakers from around the globe. Hey, everybody. It's Terry McDougall with another episode of Marketing Mambo. And my guest today is Mike Bjarnes. He is the author of a brand new book called Redefining Success. He is also the manager of new products and business development at Janssen Pharmaceutical Companies of Johnson & Johnson. And he's got a really interesting background with a BS in biology from Penn State, a master's in science and biotechnology from Georgetown, and then he went back a few years later and got an MBA from Georgetown. So, Mike, welcome to Marketing Mambo. How are you today?
Hi, Terry. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
I'm doing really great. I mean, I love having great guests like you on my show, so it couldn't be better. So you've got a really impressive background, and I'd love for you to talk to us about what a manager of new products and business development does in pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, thanks so much. So we cover end-to-end the drug development process. So it's a really unique role. We work with products that are coming out of R&D, the most innovative things that we have, and we prep them for launch and transition them from a global purview to a very US-centric purview, which is drastically different. You can think about all the different kinds of healthcare systems we have, the different kinds of providers that are within the ecosystem, how there might be patient needs that differ between Japan, the US, and China. So we have our global team developing these amazing products, and then we need to translate all of those amazing products to what would work in the USA.
Okay, so it's really like fitting it to the needs of the marketplace in a way.
Yep, 100%. And building out our capabilities for that.
Oh, well, tell me more about that. What does that mean?
Yeah, so we're standing up teams pre-launch for not just marketing, but we're working with our trade and distribution partners. We're working with the insurance companies, the payers, to make sure that this is covered, that our patients will have access to this new drug as soon as it's available and on the market. We're working with our medical teams. We have scientific affairs teams, creating all sorts of great data to supplement our clinical trials. So we can talk a little bit more about the nuances of marketing within the pharmaceutical sector. We're very strictly regulated, but there are some things where, you know, you can have side research projects which are published in peer-reviewed journals. They're all scientific, but it's not marketable material, but it's still a huge way of disseminating key information to the doctors who will end up prescribing this to the patients who need it.
Yeah, to me, it's really fascinating because, as you say, it's highly regulated. I came from a financial services background, which is highly regulated, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to the regulations that you find in pharmaceuticals. And therefore, obviously, it has a big impact on how you market. I think that the point that you just made about research and papers that go into the medical journals, and that clearly would have an influence on doctors understanding the drug and feeling confident about prescribing it. So I would love it if you'd go a little bit deeper there, because again, I'm like just trying to get my head wrapped around it. It's such a different environment than what I'm used to from a marketing standpoint. So
yeah. So from a marketing standpoint, we really think about this in a few different ways. So right now I'm working on a product, for instance, where there really hasn't been much in terms of a new innovation, a new medicine for these patients, pretty much ever. So these are kind of rare diseases. They're very high unmet needs. And so we're using novel mechanisms of actions as science words for things that, you know, haven't been really used in the past, but they provide great end results. But that means that it's not just marketing a product and having a brand and things like that. Usually what it means is way up front, educating providers of this new mechanism, creating a landscape and making sure that there's great awareness that because it's a rare disease, that these rare diseases exist. There's some great data out there that shows that if you have a rare disease, it might take 5 to 7 years for you to get the correct diagnosis. And it's just because the doctors that you're seeing just aren't used to seeing many cases. And so can you educate the market that these diseases exist, how they're diagnosed, what mechanisms of action are important in these diseases? And that's before you even start talking about your specific product. That's simply just getting a lay of the land. Then you get into, on the back end, marketing your product, and you work with FDA to figure out exactly what you can say based very, very carefully on how you designed your clinical trial. So a lot of nuances, a lot of red tape, but many different ways that we have to market. And it's branded, it's unbranded, it's all sorts of things.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And yeah, it's not as open of a market as a lot of other products, right? Like where you just innovate and you're like, hey, we made this new yo-yo. Let's go out and sell it to whoever wants it, right? It's so interdependent between the insurance companies and the medical profession and the government. So interesting.
Yeah. And in there as well, it's super important, patient advocacy groups, the patients themselves. So we do all sorts of market research, make sure that we're meeting all their needs. And it's, like you said, so many different stakeholders that you need to be able to speak to.
Yeah. You know, I think your background is so interesting too, because you've got that biology and biotechnology background. And then what was it that led you to decide to go back and get an MBA?
So from the get-go, I thought eventually I would need an MBA. But I thought as I started my career, first, I really liked the science. You know, I'm a nerd at heart. It's what I like. But I thought it was really important that if I was going to be a business leader one day, that I really understood the processes, the lab work. So I worked in a lab for 5 years doing R&D, doing drug target discovery, literally getting my hands dirty, using pipettes, all of that great stuff, doing data analysis. From there, I was fortunate. I made the jump to the business side, and I was really able to translate that science into business insights, trying to understand key practices, how to get the customers exactly what they needed. And as I started to reflect on next steps, I saw that no matter which path I took moving forward, an MBA would be immensely helpful. It really opens your mind. It makes you explore problem solving in a different lens. And I think it's crucial to get those kinds of perspectives if you want to be a good leader moving forward. I mean, you can do it with hands-on experience as well, but I figured the MBA was a good track for me.
Well, as a fellow MBA, I completely agree. I mean, you can understand certain aspects of a business, but being able to see maybe what you've done early in your career in a larger context of the business and understand all the different functional areas, I think is really invaluable. So what was it that attracted you to marketing, having started in the labs, doing more of the science stuff? It's really a different type of path than most people that I've interviewed for this podcast. So tell me, what was it that was attractive to you about marketing?
Yeah. So to me, I love marketing because in the end, you can develop the best product in the world, but if people don't know about it, if people aren't educated about it, it's not going to get in the hands of the people. And in the end, the reason I'm in healthcare is to improve patient outcomes. I knew very early on, I didn't want to be a PhD. I didn't want to be necessarily the person that would be the subject matter expert in a very specific disease. But I knew that I wanted to be close enough to the science to understand it, but then translate that into getting it in the hands of the people who needed it most. And so I see that as marketing, right? So could I become a doctor? I explored that route a little bit. It wasn't for me. I think marketing is a great fit for what I like, seeing the innovations, translating the science into something that's usable, and making sure that we fill unmet needs for patients in the best way possible.
I agree with you that that's marketing at its heart, right? It's really about being an advocate for the patient or the client and understanding, like, what do they need? And if they need something, how are they going to even know that it's available? So I also think it's super interesting because you have to have this depth of knowledge from a scientific standpoint to be able to understand and speak the language of what it is that you do at a pharmaceutical organization. So very interesting.
Yeah, no, I consider myself a bridger. So I love being able to talk with the scientists, the people doing the actual work, people doing the clinical trials at R&D. And I love being able to translate all of that valuable information into something that is digestible for the average person who may not like science, might even be scared of science, but still wants and needs these products whenever they get ill or hopefully as a preventative case.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that, you know, having worked in financial services and some of the services and products that we sold were not, especially in the B2B arena, were a little bit exotic, right? So it wasn't like the average person was going to understand it. And being that person who was the translator was fulfilling to say, what is it that they actually need? And how do we translate what we have and demonstrate that this is going to fulfill that need? I think it's a really important role that is played in business for sure.
Yeah. And I really like the other end as well, right? Taking the insights from the end user, from the patients, from your clients, and making sure that if your product doesn't actually fill those needs, you can relay that back to the development team and they can make the changes necessary. They can innovate the clinical trial mm-hmm. as necessary to make sure that, yes, we are fulfilling the end user's needs.
Yeah. I used to call that being the advocate for the customer. Is there anything else that you want to tell us, anything that is interesting or different about what you do that you think would be interesting for our audience to hear?
Yeah, so it's a brave new world. I won't lie. So I'm about 6 months into this role or so. I'm learning and getting up to speed myself. And I can tell you that as complex as an ecosystem as you can imagine, healthcare might be even more complex, right? I know we have a lot of issues in this whole system and there's many, many players in the landscape, but just getting up to speed on the different nomenclature, the different players, what they care about, how they view different problems. It's like a brave new world, just opening Pandora's box, if I'm going to use all the cliches in the world, but yeah, super complex ecosystem. I like to advocate whenever I talk and we're talking about healthcare for folks who are considering pretty much any career. You can do it in the healthcare realm, right? So if you like mm-hmm. tech, healthcare is in tech, right? If you like being client-facing, we have patient-facing. If you like finance, pretty much any functional group that you want to do, you can do it in healthcare. And there's so much good and so much impact that you can have in this field that really is what drives me.
Yeah, it sounds like if you enjoy complexity, which I think it's sophistication and interesting challenges, it sounds like a really good industry to go into. I mean, I tend to like that complexity. It's just kind of fun to be able to have something meaty to grab onto and also to have those opportunities, right? Like once you get to know the industry and then there is a bit of a barrier to entry, right? You have to, like in your case, you've got a biology degree and then a master's in biotech and now another master's. So very cool. Well, let's pivot to talk about your book. So this is how you and I met, was we went through the same book writing program that Eric Kester from Georgetown University put on. And I'm presuming that you met Eric through your MBA program.
I actually met him through a student that went through the program and then recommended it highly to me. And of course, Eric made himself readily available being a professor at Georgetown.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk a bit about your book. It's called Redefining Success. Why don't you tell us what the full title is and talk to us a little bit about what the book is about and what inspired you to write it?
Sure. So the full title is Redefining Success: Stories, Science, and Strategies to Prioritize Happiness and Overcome Life's Oh Shit Moments.
Okay. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. So it is a mouthful, but I thought that it was the best way to capture what was going on here, right? So to give you some context as to what's in the book, maybe I should tell you a little bit about why I wrote this book. So I was doing the healthcare career and wanting to get up to the C-suite level role as quickly as possible. And two things happened, actually. So one was I was noticing that more and more of my time, more of my decisions were being dictated by my career and not necessarily aligning as well with the other facets of my life. So it's taking more time. I was commuting a lot. And so I was really reflecting on, you know, what I wanted to do next. Personally, what ended up happening was my father ended up being diagnosed with cancer. And after a 2-year battle where literally every 3 weeks I was driving from DC to Philly to be with him for oncology visits, radiation, all these things, he ended up passing away. And that is what I affectionately call an oh shit moment. It's something that really knocks you on your butt and makes you think, why am I doing the things that I'm doing? What am I prioritizing in life? Maybe even a step before then, what are my priorities in life?
Yeah.
And how do I align my life to better reflect my priorities? And so that's when I decided to push pause, decided to pursue my MBA because I knew I wanted one, because I knew that no matter what path I chose, it would be helpful. And frankly, I'm so glad I did it. It let me hit this reset button and really explore what was out there. But along the way, I started talking to individuals like yourself, like so many people in my program, people in every industry possible. And I noticed I wasn't alone, that many people go through life and find themselves in a career where all of a sudden they're no longer aligned necessarily with what is driving happiness and fulfillment in their lives holistically. And so as I started writing, I realized that I can no longer have these conversations. I can no longer do this research just for me. And so I started this book writing process to share my findings with the world.
Yeah, well, it's so great. And there's a lot of similarities in your book and your reason for wanting to write your book and my book, Winning the Game of Work. And you know, because we both went through the writing process, that in the beginning, Eric says, okay, you might not even know what your book is about, but it's about the intersection of X and Y. And for me, it was about the intersection of professional success and personal happiness, because I think we could both probably relate to this idea of being an overachiever, right? Like being sort of into school, and you said you're a science nerd, and professional success was always important to me. Academic success was important to me. And so I'm not going to walk away from that. But on the other hand, sometimes you can really, like you were saying, lose sight of what's important because maybe you are so goal-oriented, like, oh, I want to get this degree, or I want to get a job with this company and move up. And we put the blinders on and just really focus on that goal. And then maybe you wake up one day and you had your oh shit moment with your dad, you know, of, wow, like, what's life really about? I mean, is it really about that quote unquote success? Or is it about enjoying these moments with the people that you love and so forth? Well, so what are some of the major themes in your book?
Yeah, so similar to you, if I had to say what's the intersection of my book, it's the science of happiness. So literally using that nerdiness of mine. So the science of happiness and society's definition of success. And so the reason I go into that is I think we're all kind of trained at an early age, like you said, to achieve, to get that A and to get that great job and to get that next promotion. And who's telling us to do this? And so that's why I call this society's definition of success. And that might not align with your version of happiness and fulfillment. And what about health? And what about your family and your community and the fun you want to have? And there's so many other facets to life. So some of the themes that I talk about are happiness, of course, fulfillment. There's a lot of great work out there. So the science of happiness, the science of fulfillment, the science of mindsets and how mindsets actually are super critical. There's a fascinating research showing that of the happiness pie, if you want to envision a pie, only 10% of our happiness comes from our circumstances. So that's our house, our salary, our job, our car, you name it. 40% comes from our mindsets. And so part two of my book dives deep into mindsets. We're talking about gratitude and vulnerability and building relationships and you name it. I have some tactics in there as well, some worksheets. Funny enough, that other 50% of the happiness pie is actually genetic. So not much you can do about that. That's okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So there's some really cool research that I cite in there showing how they got to that 50% mark. Depending on which study you look at, it's a little bit higher, a little bit lower, but without fail, genetics is part of that happiness pie. So the key take home there is of the things you can control, mindsets are what dominate whether you will feel happy or not. And so there's all sorts of science and literature and research that I point to saying, here are some mindsets and you know they're not all going to work for you. They don't all work for me. The central thesis of my book is there's really no guru that can tell you what success means for you except for you.
Yeah, so true. It's so funny because if you look out into society for every example of somebody who was an excellent student and went to Harvard and did all the things that society tells them to do and then ascends to the highest rungs of what we call success, there's an example of someone who has the opposite experience and went on to be successful. Or you can just run into people maybe in your neighborhood who knows what they do, but they're super happy and they seem to be enjoying their lives, right? And who's to say that might be the most successful out of everybody, right? That person who's just happy walking their dog around the neighborhood or whatever might be the happiest person that we ever meet, most yeah. successful person that we ever meet, which is yeah. really, it's really cool.
I completely agree. And I think we can all agree that at least happiness should be somewhere in your definition of success. If you're not living a happy life, if you're not feeling happy, then what is success? Can you really consider yourself successful? And so that's not to say that you shouldn't work. Some people are actually really driven by work. And one of my chapters focuses on some of those folks. They love it. There's actually mm-hmm. something called an engaged workaholic, which are literally spared from all of the terrible health ramifications of being a workaholic. If you are an engaged workaholic, meaning you love your work, you love what you're doing, but you're just working a ton of hours, you actually are spared from those terrible health ramifications, which is just fascinating to me. And so my message again is I can't tell you what's going to make you happy. I can't tell you what success should mean. But what I can tell you is if you don't put in the work to do it for yourself, you're going to end up with someone else's definition of success. You're going to be misaligned and you won't be as happy and fulfilled as you think you will be. And I actually love your example. I know we talked about it. I feature your story in my book about goal achievement, about self-actualization. I love your story so much. So thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you for interviewing me. I really appreciate that. And I've said it many, many times that I agree with you in terms of what is success, like the money and the title and the cars and the vacations and all of that, if you really don't have the space to enjoy it. And, you know, when you were talking about the engaged workaholics, what came to mind was this idea of choice, because I really believe we are always at choice. But sometimes we allow others or maybe our perception of what others expect of us to color what we choose. That choice might not be coming from inside of us. It might be saying, oh, well, this is what my parents expect, or this is what are the neighbors going to think or whatever. And we make choices that aren't really aligned with what we truly want deep down inside. And, you know, when you're talking about the engaged workaholic, I mean, that's somebody who has chosen that profession and they've chosen to work the hours that they do. But if you're getting enjoyment out of it, I mean, I always say it's about energy. It's energy in and energy out. If you're doing things you enjoy, it's going to fill your energy tank up. But if you're doing too much of what you don't enjoy and not spending enough time refilling the tank, you're going to end up in a deficit. And that's when people get burnt out. And I think that it's just about awareness.
Yeah, I love that analogy. And to your point of awareness, one thing that has been revolutionary for me is this concept of a life plan. Mm-hmm. So literally, I have documented what matters to me. And I have this in my book, a template of how you can do this for yourself. But what matters to me? And how I should be spending my time and what my goals are for the next 6 months. And that's the key. I revisit this document every 6 months to say, how did I do? Am I living aligned with what I thought I wanted? Has what I wanted changed? Because that's okay too. You know, sometimes we find something new, a new passion, whatever it might
mm-hmm.
be.
Yeah.
And we want to change. And that's no problem whatsoever. But without having the capacity to really understand what you want and then trying to align your life accordingly and reflecting, you stand no chance. So my wife and I literally go through this almost like a performance evaluation of ourselves. We kind of document where we want to go the next 6 months. And we literally have Google Calendar appointments to do this with ourselves every 6 months.
That is really great. I actually have a client who has done that for like 15 years. And he tells me that he's accomplished like 80% of the things. He's actually got a spreadsheet and he goes back and he highlights the things that he's accomplished. And I'm super impressed by that. But I do think, going back to the whole idea of mindset, that if you can keep yourself focused on the things that you've decided you want in your life, you're going to see those opportunities. Your energy is going to go towards that. Your efforts are going to go towards that rather than maybe losing focus or getting distracted along the way. So, you know, kudos to you guys for being so disciplined about it.
Yeah. Well, don't get me wrong. We still stray from time to time, but yeah, we do our best. And I think the discipline is what matters. And they say, as you write things down, you're much more likely to actually accomplish them. So
yeah, there's a level of commitment to that, I think. I love what you were saying about the mindset too. And I look forward to looking at that part of your book, because that's something that I see a lot in coaching, is that it's really a matter of getting clear on your goal, making sure this is really what I want. Because a lot of times people aren't really clear on what they want, really. They're just sort of like doing stuff and maybe not really stopping to say, like, why am I pursuing this goal? Is it something I want? Am I doing it for some other reason? But also, if you decide that you want a goal, really shifting to a mindset that you believe it's possible. I don't know if you touch on that in your book at all, but sometimes I find that people will tell me that they want something, but yet they'll immediately say, well, here's all the reasons why it's not likely. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, if you don't believe it's possible, probably not going to happen.
Yeah. So some of that is touched upon. So I have a chapter about our passions and about the growth mindset, and how they're actually intertwined more than we think. Mm-hmm. And so part of the growth mindset is trying new things and being open-minded and feeling like you can go and do new things and learn. And there's a lot of science out there that's debunked. You can actually teach old dogs new tricks. I don't care what age you are. You can go do new things. You can learn and you can adapt. And if it's something you want to put your mind to, yeah, the growth mindset, I highly recommend that chapter, chapter 10.
Okay, good. I'll have to look that one up. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And before we wrap things up, do you have any last words of wisdom for our listeners?
Yeah, so I waited for my own oh shit moment, as I call it, but I hope that you do not. So there's a lot of research, there's a lot of reasons why you should align your life around your priorities now. First, it'll make you more resilient for when inevitably an oh shit moment comes to you. But second, you're just going to reap the rewards sooner. You're going to feel happier. You're going to feel more fulfilled. You're going to feel more aligned with your priorities. So, you know, I waited. I hope that you all don't. Feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to connect and help guide in this process if possible. Read my book. There's some great resources in there as well. And if none of that resonates, that's cool too. Just don't wait. Go align your life around your priorities.
Yeah, I love that. That's such great advice. Now, it's Redefining Success. And where can people find your book, Mike?
Yeah, so luckily it's anywhere you purchase books. So Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble. For my Canadian friends, I just learned that it's up on Indigo. So feel free, reach out anywhere. You can also get information. If you can't find it anywhere, go to my website, michaelbjarnes.com. And all my book info is on there as well. So yeah, anywhere you buy books, you can find Redefining Success.
Okay, so michaelbjarnes.com. Any place else that you want to share with people about how to get in touch?
Yeah, so I'm on all socials, very easy to find, just my full name, Michael Bjarnes. I guess there's not many of us, or maybe I was just the first to get all the handles. But yeah, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, I'm there. Feel free to reach out. I love connecting with folks. So let's connect and let's hear about your story.
Awesome. Well, I'll put all the links in the show notes. Mike, thanks so much for coming on today. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, Terry. This is fantastic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Marketing Mambo. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, like, and share. I'd love to hear from you. Check out the show notes for my social media and contact information. Until next time, adios.